You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition. I'm Dave Raymond, and this week we find out about a team that strikes out so much, but no one cares. One team in the division has yet to win back-to-back games, and the Pirates doing something this week that they hadn't done since 2007. A whole lot more to cover as well in the National League Central Edition. Dr. Jennifer Langosch, who, look, I mean, you're having to parse a whole lot of medical terminology these days as you cover the St. Louis Cardinals, and it's not funny. I mean, it's a difficult situation, and obviously the largest concern is the news about Adam Wainwright and his left Achilles tendon. What is the latest that you can give us on a Monday afternoon?
Yeah, it was a house of horrors up in Milwaukee where it seemed like every day somebody was hobbling off the field alongside a trainer and Mike Matheny. But you're right. I mean, Wainwright is the most serious of any of the injuries that happened this weekend. Right now the Cardinals are bracing for playing the rest of 2015 without him. So, you know, at this point, I think having him back at any point would be a bonus. You know, whether we're talking about a ruptured Achilles, a strained Achilles, a tear, I mean, it's somewhat semantics at this point, because regardless of what it is, it's going to be months of rehab for him. And when you look at the fact that the calendar is about to turn to May, it's probably unrealistic to expect him back this year. So huge blow to the Cardinals, game changer in the NL Central. If you look at, you know, if you were to consider the most valuable player on this Cardinals team, I think Wainwright would fall there at number one or two. So the Cardinals' rotation depth is obviously going to be tested, but there's no easy way of going about replacing Adam Wainwright atop that group.
No, and your point is an obvious and good one. Adam Wainwright is the heart and soul. It was Drayton McClain, the owner of the Astros, who coined the term the heartbeat of a franchise when he would talk about Craig Biggio or Jeff Bagwell. I think of Wainwright in those similar terms, very much the heartbeat of the St. Louis Cardinals. That said, our good friend Phil Rogers, he's already thumping the table for a trade with the White Sox, and you know, people are wondering, what does this mean for the Cardinals? I get it. Wainwright's huge. But if there's a team with starting pitching depth that could handle the loss of an ace starter, if there's one team, I would think it would be the St. Louis Cardinals, no?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is interesting. A month ago, we were discussing how in the world the Cardinals were going to find room for seven major league starting pitchers in a five-man rotation, and now, you know, there's going to be an opportunity for somebody else to step up. So certainly, I mean, you look at this rotation through the first 16 games of the year, had a sub-2 ERA. So it wasn't just Adam Wainwright who was pitching well. It was Lance Lynn, Michael Walker, Carlos Martinez has come out of the gate really strong. And, you know, John Lackey hasn't had the greatest of starts, but his track record speaks for himself. So, yeah, I mean, they do have a very strong 2-5. And then behind them, Marco Gonzalez and Jaime Garcia. You know, Jaime, a guy who, when healthy, has proven to be a very capable major league starter. And Marco Gonzalez, who's shined on the postseason stage last year, had a very good spring. He could also factor in. So, you know, it's interesting. The Cardinals don't necessarily have the starting depth that they've had the last couple of years, and that's the product of a couple of trades and dealing away Joe Kelly and Shelby Miller last year. But, yeah, I mean, they do believe they have some depth. And, again, when you look at kind of who was behind Wainwright 2-5, this team doesn't really have a number 4-5 starter. When you consider Michael Walker and Carlos Martinez, those are type talents that in other rotations might be more middle or even top end of the rotation type. So, you know, we'll see. But, again, this isn't just replacing somebody in the rotation. It's replacing an ace, and it's also going to be having to find somebody who can carry that innings workload. You know, when we talk about Michael Walker and Carlos Martinez, based on what they did last year, they're not ready to pitch 200 innings this year. So when you lose a guy in Wainwright who had thrown nearly 520 the last 2 years, where the Cardinals are going to find those innings is going to be very interesting.
That's a great point, because not only does that affect the rotation, but now you're implicating the bullpen and what sort of pressure that may put on, you know, the likes of Seth Maness, Matt Belisle, whomever the case, who, you know, somebody's going to have to undoubtedly pick up those innings, and oftentimes those are bullpen guys. So, but what about that the mood as it pertains to the loss of Wainwright? His demeanor and the way he handles it is one thing, but how does it resonate in the rest of that clubhouse?
Yeah, I mean, I think we did see on Saturday, you know, the Cardinals won that game that he comes out of. You walk into the clubhouse, and it had the atmosphere of a funeral, to be honest with you. It was silent, not much speaking going on until Adam Wainwright started to hold court among his teammates and try to cheer them up. So You know, he probably has had the best attitude through all this. He's trying to crack a smile. He's trying to crack a joke. You know, he wasn't resigned to the fact that his season is lost until a doctor tells him so. But, I mean, I think the impact does weigh heavily on his team. That being said, this is also a club that has lost several key players over the last couple of years and has managed to make deep playoff runs despite it. I mean, we think about 2011, Adam Wainwright out with Tommy John surgery, Cardinals win the World Series. Chris Carpenter the year after, Jason Mott, they lost their closer a couple of years ago. So, I mean, this is it's a normal thing in baseball, and you do expect players to go down at one time or another. I do know, you know, knowing Wainwright, he is going to be the biggest cheerleader that this organization has through all of this. I would imagine he'll continue traveling with the team. He'll be around for home games. He is going to continue to be a mentor to some of those young pitchers and the starting staff because he doesn't really know how not to be. So while he won't necessarily have the impact every fifth day on the mound, I think we will still have see him have a pretty big impact inside that clubhouse.
Yeah, I don't doubt that one bit. You know, you mentioned there were a handful of guys who ended up coming off the field with a trainer, and Hayward, another one. He came off with the groin strain. What do we know about him?
Yeah, a mild groin strain. He didn't seem to think it was anything serious, and you know, actually made a pitch an effort to lobby to stay in that game on Sunday. You know, Mike Matheny's point being that Jason Hayward doesn't do anything less than 110%. So the last thing you wanted was him being aggressive in the outfield, aggressive on the bases, and making that injury any worse. So I expect that to just be a day-to-day issue. And then obviously with Yadier Molina out since Friday, also somewhat of a day-to-day issue. So neither seems to be a situation where there's going to be a DL stint involved, which is certainly encouraging to the Cardinals. But, you know, exactly how long, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, when they come back, you know, at that point, we're not really sure.
Kind of the craziest, though, was Reynolds running into the scoreboard. I mean, that's the one that looked the ugliest.
It did. He face-planted into the scoreboard. You know, and that part of the wall at Miller Park isn't padded. It is a scoreboard. So, you know, not only did he do it once, but then immediately after being checked out, having a concussion test on the field, he did it in the next at-bat as well, ran right back into the wall. Not as hard that time, but it was funny. I watched Mike Matheny's reaction from the dugout, and he just threw up his arms, you know, like exasperated at the fact that his players keep coming up injured. So, he did. He passed concussion tests both on the field and then in the clubhouse afterwards, so he seemed to be okay. You know, and if he was pegging on his teammates afterwards, he did make both of the catches, so he had that going for him.
you call the Wainwright energy a game changer in the division, and I think that's fair to say. The good news for Cardinals fans is the team is now home for quite a little stretch, 2 4-game homestands and an overall 11-game stay at home, including games against the Pirates. And if there is a team in the division that has the pitching that could sort of stand up to St. Louis, it would be the Pirates. So that's starting to loom as a fairly big early season series.
Yeah, no, I would agree. You know, to this point, the Cardinals have beat up on the Reds, the Brewers, and, you know, they face the Cubs once, but they haven't seen the Pirates yet. And I do think that when we're talking about getting into August and September, that the Pirates probably do pose the biggest threat to the Cardinals repeating, you know, as division champs. So they have a series in St. Louis this weekend. The following weekend, they have a series in Pittsburgh. So I think it's going to be a good barometer of kind of where those two teams are and what could be a pretty fun fight in the NL Central from here on forward.
Who do you think shoulders the greatest responsibility as we kind of wrap this thing up in that starting rotation now that Wainwright is out? Is it on, you know, Lackey's been able to kind of scuffle along here for a little while. Is the pressure now on his shoulders to pick it up, or do you lean on Lance Lynn, or how does that kind of play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about talent-wise and who could kind of fit the role of an ace within a rotation, Lance Lynn, I think, profiles as having that ability. Now, he kind of had a clunker on Sunday, which was not necessarily encouraging, but I mean, he's pitched as a frontline starter the last few years without kind of the title to go along with it. So I think when we talk about results, and we talk about an innings eater, I mean, he is a guy who's going to be huge to this group. When we talk about leadership, I think that's where John Lackey is going to come into play. And, you know, he's been a guy who has fit in really well here, become a great mentor to a lot of the young pitchers. I know Marco Gonzalez in particular followed him like a little kid this spring, learning things about different pitches and mentality and how you prepare for starts. So when we talk about kind of somebody filling Adam Wainwright's mentor shoes, I think John Lackey and his experience can do that. But, you know, I think Mike Matheny made a good point yesterday that you can't ask any one person to try to step up and do too much in Wainwright's absence. it's going to kind of have to be a collective group effort that they're going to have to shoulder this together to some extent. And then whoever, whether it's a patchwork kind of going along in that spot or one guy that runs away with it, whoever fills that spot, they're going to need somebody to do it soon, and they're going to need somebody to do it well.
Yeah, well, no doubt it is going to be a very interesting week to see how the Cardinals respond. Jen, make sure you wear your seatbelt, your bike helmet, look both ways before crossing the street. Something's going on there with the St. Louis Cardinals. We want you to stay safe.
Well, I appreciate it. I was thrilled to get out of Milwaukee unscathed.
Yes, indeed, as it's just about anybody else with the team. Carrie, look, the youth movement is underway with the Chicago Cubs. I think it was five under the age of 25. And I got to believe that they're kind of coming together a little bit as a group. Is there a little like young person's fraternity in this clubhouse?
There might be. I know over the weekend in Cincinnati during the rain delay on Saturday, Anthony Rizzo posted a photo of the five of them, which includes, in case fans can't keep up, it's Jorge Soler, Addison Russell, Chris Bryant, Rizzo, and Starlin Castro. And it was really kind of a cute little photo. And we were joking with Zach Roscup that he was too young, too old to be part of the group, and he's only 26. So no, they're an interesting. They're, you know, that what everyone keeps telling me is that they will get better as the year progresses, and so I think that's what's going to be fun to watch.
What's the early impression? I know it's only been a handful of games for Addison Russell, but how has he looked at second base?
Actually, outstanding. It's been a much smoother transition than I think some people might have thought. I've been told by a lot of coaches that it's easier to go from short to second than it is from second to short. So maybe that's part of it. Also, just the fact he's a really good athlete, and he's made a couple plays that have just been really, really solid and shows that he's comfortable there. He says he's getting more comfortable, you know, as games progress. And, again, it's just a matter of I'm sure there's going to be moments when he's going to be out of position, relay throws, double plays, things like that. But so far he's really looked comfortable there.
And Starlin Castro doesn't look like he's feeling any pressure. I mean, he continues to click at the plate. Defensively, he's turning in excellent plays as well as, I know what Chicago's like. I know how the media can be, and they like to poke around and sometimes push people a little bit. Has there been much in terms of conversation with Starlin Castro and how he feels with guys like Addison Russell breathing down his neck, or have people pretty much just let him be?
Actually, no. Starlin, I think, has handled this really well too, because his attitude is. I think Sharon's got a little different approach in that Madden kind of challenged some of these players to play well enough to win gold gloves. And Starlin has been, his defensive lapses have unfortunately occurred on major stages, such as I think it was a Sunday night baseball game, and Bobby Valentine kind of reamed him out. And it was justified. I mean, it was he wasn't paying attention on the play. So I'm not trying to make any excuses for him, but I think Starlin, one of the things that Starlin mentioned to us is that he doesn't want to be considered a joke anymore. And I thought that was it's a very mature statement at some point for a 25-year-old. He's taking this as a challenge, and he wants to do well, and he doesn't want – another thing that Joe stresses is don't let your teammates down, and I don't think Starlin wants to let anybody down.
Well, so far, so good. Both sides of it really looks like. I want to ask you about strikeouts. It's always a good topic for conversation. Is there a philosophy that Theo or Joe Madden that they have about strikeouts? The modern era of analytics, you know, I feel like it's the stat that no one cares about anymore because it just has to get on base or hit the long ball. But, boy, they're piling up for some of these guys. You know, even Addison Russell, you know, with 12 strikeouts for the first five games, or Soler, who's struck out nearly 30 times already this season. Do they care? Is that an issue?
It's not mentioned. I think it's one of those things that if you talk about it, then they start thinking about it too much. What they're very excited about is the fact that the Cubs lead the National League in on-base percentage. And I'm sorry, not on-base percentage, in pitches per plate appearance, which is, I'm sure stat geeks understand all this, but Manden is happy about that because it shows that they're having good approaches at the plate. And, okay, maybe they do strike out, but they're seeing a lot of pitches. It's not one, two, three, and gone. And they're working their at-bats, and they're going up there with good approaches. And so that's what he's happy about. Soler was discussed. His strikeout rate has increased in his last nine games, and it could just be a matter of it's been really cold. And I'm not sure if anybody's caught a photo of Soler in some of these games, but he's got almost a complete head covering because he doesn't deal with the cold weather very well. And I think that could be part of it. And when the weather heats up, he might also heat up. But they don't, you know, obviously strikeouts are not productive outs. But I think because the players have such a good approach and are seeing so many pitches and are working as hard as they can in terms of trying to get the right pitch, that I haven't heard that strikeout word mentioned very often.
Yeah, and I guess to your point, Soler, you know, 321 on base percentage to this point in the season. That's right there at league average, maybe a little better than league average. So it hasn't hurt him, and he's been driving the ball a little bit too, right? I mean, when he's made contact, he had the two home run game, hasn't had any since then, but still some gap power, I guess.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of, you know, teams right now, I think pitchers have figured him out a little bit. And again, I'm not blaming the cold weather, but the conditions aren't great. And he's still kind of getting used to things. So there's still, we have to remember, Cub fans need to remember, that they are rookies and that they're still kind of growing up here. And it's just, Soler still has a really good approach. He's getting his walks. And it's the strikeouts are going to happen. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Well, and I mentioned Addison Russell when we started that. It still has not yet walked, has had the 12 strikeouts. Did have a big hit in the win the other day. And I guess in some ways that maybe takes a little monkey off his back. How has he felt? How has he reacted to his first five games, particularly, I guess, at the plate?
I mean, a lot of adjustments. He mentioned he had a three-run double on Sunday in the series finale in Cincinnati and mentioned after that it was a stepping stone. So he's, you know, you don't get too high, you don't get too low kind of thing, which is good. I'm excited to see him at Wrigley Field. Coming into this, he had not made his debut there yet, so this will be kind of nice. He's got family coming in, so that should help him a little bit, either relax or maybe get a little too amped up, one or the other. But it's still, you know, he's 21, youngest player in the National League right now. You know, you tend to forget that. He's only played like a handful of games at AAA, so it's not as if he's had that many at bats there. And they're willing to put up with the growing pains right now. So let's see what happens with that.
Yeah, so you know you forget it that he's 21 years old, youngest player in the
National League. Well, I don't forget. I mean, he was telling us his father is the same age as David Ross, the catcher on the team. So that's a little bit of a shocker. So,
man, that's unreal. Does he come off as 21 when you know outside of those types of comments? Does he carry himself with the maturity of a 21 year old, or does he?
No, he actually carries himself much more mature than that. So it's hard to believe that he's only 21, you know, because he does carry himself much much more mature than that. I think he's been through a lot. Think about it. I mean, the guy's already been traded. That can be, you know, players can handle that plus or minus. Now he was in the big league camp. Now suddenly he's in the big leagues. I mean, it's happened. A lot of stuff has happened pretty fast. What I like is that he told me that he's engaged to be married, but the wedding is not until December 2016. So there's plenty of time to prepare. There's no rush or anything. And he's known this woman for a long time. So he's doing mature things for a 21-year-old.
Man, yeah. That's so much on that plate. And Monday night, his debut at Wrigley Field. As if there's a reason to celebrate or create a circus at Wrigley Field. Oh, there it is for Monday night, Addison Russell's home debut. Kerry, always great stuff. Thanks so much for the time.
Great, no problem.
Tom, you had a note coming out of this weekend, and the Pirates are just at the front end of a long, long road trip. I had not realized how rough it's been for the Pirates on the road in the National League West. But I guess they got a certain monkey off their back this weekend.
Well, yes, they did. They did have a winning record last season, but sweeping the Diamondbacks in Arizona, they'd never done that before, and they hadn't swept any National League West club on the road since 2007 in San Francisco. So, you know, Clint Hurdle took this job 5 years ago with a long list of, you know, bucket list of things he wanted to get rid of, and success against the National League West clubs, and particularly on the road, was really near the top of that list. So he can definitely, you know, check that off.
I don't know about you, but I always, you know, when you're with a team in the middle of the country where it gets so smoking hot in the middle of the summer, I always like to see those West Coast trips spaced out in, you know, June, July, August. I almost feel like it's a waste to go out there this early in the season, because that nice cool weather in the middle of the summer was always so nice.
That's true. The schedule varies. I believe this is the third time in 4 years that they've been in Phoenix in April. A couple years ago, you know, the first road trip also took him to Los Angeles. So the schedule varies, but and that's been one of the challenges going out in the West Coast early. You know, kind of you know, obviously you spend whole spring training on the East Coast, and then you get into a certain frame of mind, and that's been one of the challenges when they have had to go out on the West early. They just weren't, you know, in sync and ready to, you know, handle those teams.
Yeah, so take care of Arizona. You think of going to Chase Field in Arizona and a chance for the offense to kind of get its legs underneath them. Really great, great place to hit. But once again, it looks like the pitching continues to be the story with this team. Just a phenomenal weekend and a tough place to pitch, I think.
Well, it is, but, you know, it was a unique series. You know, Clint Hurdle mentioned that obviously he's been coming to Chase Field since it opened. Well, maybe not since it opened, but since, you know, 97. And this is the first time he can recall a three-game series in which there were no home runs hit. Part of the reason might have been the fact that the roof was open all three games, which kind of had a wind factor, which usually you don't deal with in Arizona. And that's the other difference in coming out here early rather than in the summer, when the roof definitely would be closed and the ball carries better. So, I mean, in that sense, it's a unique series, but, you know, they definitely got the bats on track, especially in the Sunday finale. You know, put up 8 runs, 14 hits. And everybody in the lineup contributed, except for Andrew McCutchen. You know, I thought that was really noteworthy of how the Pirates are going. They're on a winning streak. McCutchen is slumping. And I don't believe there was one question asked of Hurdle, you know, what is wrong with McCutchen. In the past, you know, McCutchen would be up front and center if he's slumping, because the team would depend so much on him. And it says a lot about the depth of this team. They got on a 5-game winning streak with no contribution from McCutchen. In a odd sense, that's a very positive comment on this team.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's an interesting thing with him. The on-base percentage is still there. He's still drawing walks. He's not striking out. When you become the guy, you know, you don't see as many good pitches. If people try to, you know, try to nibble a little bit on you, and the patient ones can at least work the walks out of it. In his case, what, you know, what is the sense? Is he squaring balls up and just hitting the Mac guys? Is he not making great contact, or are they just pitching around him?
They're pitching around him, and Kutch is the one guy that totally believes in the process and maintaining his way of doing things. He's not going to get anxious. He's not going to jump at pitches. And like you said, he's been drawing walks. I believe he's got 1/4 of the whole walks that the team has drawn. You know, some guys might get impatient and get a little bit, you know, try to, you know, overdo things. But, you know, Kutch has total confidence that if he maintains his regular procedure, the hits will start falling. And actually, he squared up quite a few balls the last couple of games in Arizona. A couple of them looked like home runs off the bat. But once again, we get back to that open roof factor, you know, the balls just do not carry as well. So, I mean, he's in a good place, oddly enough, for somebody who's, you know, won for his last 17 leaving Phoenix. you know, the hits will start finding grass. And he's been, like I said, he's been getting on base by drawing walks and coming around on, you know, other people's hits.
Yeah, you know, still second on the team with 11 RBIs as well. What's been the biggest offensive surprise for this team, if there is one? Is it Polanco? Where do you go with the most pleasing, you know, performance so far this season?
Well, Polanco's been the one big uptick. You know, the three high-profile outfielders by far is having the most early season production. But I don't know if that's a surprise because everybody expected him to, you know, come through and kind of erase the memory of the last 2 months of his rookie season. So I don't think it's a surprise, but he's been very highly productive. That's another aspect of the fact that they are performing so well early. There really hasn't been an offensive surprise. Nobody really stood out with the bat that you didn't expect. So they're not winning because they're getting unexpected contribution. They're winning despite the fact that nobody has really stood up with the bat, which once again, you know, gets you back to that very strong pitching that, you know, it's been carrying them.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Francisco Liriano pitched very well on Sunday, got the win, which those don't always come for him. You described him as kind of quiet. How would you characterize Liriano? What kind of a personality is
he? Oh, he's very businesslike and very intelligent. He's definitely a quiet leader in the clubhouse. You know, the way he goes about not only his pitching days, but the days in between does set an example for everybody else. But he's not a guy that's going to talk a good game, which is, you know, to the, you know, that kind of disappoints reporters sometimes because it's kind of tough to get a good quote out of him. I mean, he's very good conversationalist, don't get me wrong. But on the record, he's not a guy to overanalyze what he does on the mound. He's definitely, you know, a big teddy bear, very quiet, but he's a great competitor. And like you said, he doesn't get as many wins as he should, which is kind of what gets most people's attention. But I honestly don't think he cares. If he pitches a good game, puts the team in a position to win, and somebody else picks up the victory in relief, you know, he could care less, I believe. I mean, he really is all team.
It's funny how, you know, he finally gets his first win of the season. A.J. Burnett hasn't won a game yet this year either. It's like, it's just so funny that sometimes the best guys, you know, the best pitchers just don't always get the wins.
Yeah, we see more and more of that. You know, obviously the way bullpens are used, unless you get a big lead, you know, by the sixth, seventh inning, which when most starters will come out of games, you do not get credit for the victory. But I think, especially within baseball, there's a lot more attention being paid to the team record in your starts rather than your personal one-loss record. People in the game understand how the dynamic of getting credit for victories has really changed. And I think, you know, maybe not in the media and in the public side, they still look at the personal one-loss record. But as far as starting pitchers are evaluated within the game, the team's record in your starts has become a lot more significant.
Yeah, I think that's one of the real upsides to the way people parse the numbers in today's game. At least we have some understanding of that portion of it, because guys can pitch awfully well and not get wins. Although the Pirates are getting plenty of those. Tom Singer, great stuff. Enjoy Chicago as you continue this long road journey.
Will do, Dave. Thanks very much.
Adam, it looks like the Brewers finally figured it out. Take the anchors to the offense, take the big fellas, and just give them a day off. It worked on Sunday.
Yeah, you know what? That always happens, Dave. It's so weird. For whatever reason, the manager is forced to post what is a, you know, looks on paper like a diminished lineup. Guys are banged up, whatever the case. And the Brewers, it was, you know, they already had three starting position guys on the DL. Then Aramis Ramirez and Ryan Braun, according to Ron Reneke, both went to the manager and said they needed the day off. So really, you've got five of the eight opening day position players out. And you think they're going to get no hit by Lance Lynn. And they instead score six runs, which is, you know, doesn't sound like much, but it matches the second most they've scored all year. And they had six extra base hits, which matched the most they'd had all season. So every time you try to figure this game out and try to figure out what's going on, you know, so far with this Brewers offense, it just makes, you know, it makes your brain bleed out of your ears.
You know, that's what I like about baseball, though. I love the Sunday lineups. I know most people sort of hate them, but I kind of like them because, A, you know, gives some guys a chance to get a few at-bats who might not otherwise be getting those. And I just think it's almost like a pressureless situation. And, you know, maybe if a team's pressing, and Lord knows the Brewers have been pressing some, it just takes some of the pressure off and guys can relax, and who knows what comes out of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. The encouraging thing for the Brewers is that it was some of their core guys who got it done. I mean, Adam Lind, for example, hits a monster home run. He's been one of those guys immune to what's going on with the rest of the team. He's been exactly what Doug Melvin hoped he was going to get when he picked him up. He's hit for some power. He's had these exceptionally professional at-bats. I mean, he's been steady, and that's what they wanted. The other guy was Gerardo Parra. I mean, I admit, I myself made a big deal yesterday. They go into to a day with a three-hole hitter with a 424 OPS. I mean, that's just sort of ridiculous for this deep into a season. And he goes out and he gets a couple extra base hits. He drives in a run. He scores a run. You know, he was important to what happened in that victory. So I think that is encouraging for the Brewers. It's that it wasn't, you know, the quote-unquote Sunday guys, although they had big days too, but it was some of the core players contributed. That's what they need. They need some of these everyday-type guys to gain a little bit of a foothold. And once that starts to happen, maybe some of the pressure comes off of the likes of Ryan Braun, Aramis Ramirez, who are struggling so bad and trying so hard to be the ones who dig this team out of what's happened so far.
Yeah, you know, you bring up Adam Lind and what he has done. And I know you talked to Mark Adonacio, Brewers owner, last week. And some of the questions you guys discussed, you know, the future of Ron Renicki, of Doug Melvin. But Lind is that guy who's staying in a lot of jobs right now, it seems to me.
Yeah, he's been really good. You know, they wanted a lefty bat in the lineup. They wanted a guy who can work some counts in what is otherwise a very streaky, aggressive offense, and he's been exactly as advertised. It's just a matter, it appears, of keeping him on the field. He's got the back issues ongoing over the last bunch of years. So far, they've done a good job of keeping him healthy, and it's, you know, the longer they can do that, the better. It's on some of these other players now. So Ryan Braun, you know, he said he was swinging terribly. He admits that he's just not been good, fighting some of the bad habits that he developed with that thumb injury in the last 2 years. Ramirez looks like he, you know, aged 10 years, frankly, over the offseason. He's going to get better as things go on. And then I guess the light at the end of the tunnel here for this team is that they got four quality starts in a row during this past homestand. That's good. They had two quality starts in their first 14 games. And now they're getting close to having Carlos Gomez back, hopefully by the end of the week, from a hamstring injury. And then their second baseman, Scooter Gennett, back from a fluky shower-related injury where he has a cut on the top of his hand, but he's also getting close. So, you know, in a week from now, they'll look a little bit more, theoretically, like the team they thought they'd have. And, you know, that at least gives you, it positions you a little bit better to break out of some of this early season slumping that they've been doing.
Well, and you lead the league in great podcasts right now because you use the line shower-related injury. And I think anytime those words are uttered together in that order, you win. It is crazy what's going on. What about Jonathan Lucroy? Is any update on how this big toe thing's going to work out with the timetable?
Well, the timetable is going to be 4 to 6 weeks. It's a bad break, the way it's fractured. And it's going to take time to heal, and they have to let it heal, the doctors are saying, in order before they can bring him back. Sometimes if it's a hairline thing, a guy can just, you know, once he tolerates the pain, he gets back in there. This is not that type of injury. But it is interesting that he's going on the road with the team. I asked him about that yesterday. Usually a guy with that sort of long timetable, they'll leave him home because basically the training staff is focused on other players. But Lucroy is important enough to what the pitching staff does and important enough just to, you know, what the team does, that they want him to remain with them and be involved, I think it speaks pretty loudly about his stature in the organization. So he's on the road. He's going to be in the pitching meetings. He's going to be in the dugout and help out where he can. And he's dying, you know. The team is struggling as bad as it has in the history of the franchise. He is a winning-type player, and this is absolutely killing him. So at least he gets to be there and kind of, you know, help where he feels like he can.
Well, we talk about the offense trying to get better and you know, maybe get something started. I know they start this week in Cincinnati. That's usually a good place for an offense to get going. At the same time, Jimmy Nelson has been maybe the bright, shining beacon of light for this franchise so far this year. He's pitched awfully well. This may be one of those tests, although Cincinnati's struggling. Never a great place to pitch, I don't think.
No, but bear in mind that the Brewers don't play in a great place to pitch either at Miller Park.
That's true.
And, you know, Nelson he's had some good starts this season at home as well. So it's he definitely qualifies as a bright spot. And it's another example of, you know, can't predict ball, because in spring training he was not very good. Yeah, he was working on a new curveball. Yeah, spring training stats are extremely misleading. But, you know, he had a minor league game where he gave up 10 runs. He just did not find any sort of rhythm in the spring. He gets to the regular season. The rest of the team goes completely south, and Jimmy Nelson, you know, surges forward. It is just such an unpredictable game, and it's a very big deal for this Brewers team because he's been by far their best starter. And now, you know, there were some signs of life from the likes of Kyle Loesch, Matt Garza, Willie Peralta. If those three can elevate their games to where they're supposed to be and Jimmy Nelson continues, you know, now you can sort of see a chance to you know, win a couple of games. They've yet to win back-to-back games as we're speaking today. So, you know, step one is get a little winning streak, and they need a big winning streak because soon enough it's going to get to decision time for the powers that be with this organization. They have a number of free agents to be. They have Carlos Gomez with 2 years to go before free agency and a gigantic payday that is going to totally price out the Brewers if we're talking realistically. There is a high probability here, barring some sort of crazy hot streak, for a pretty big sell-off as this team goes towards the end of July.
Yeah, making this stretch really critical. You know, Cincinnati hasn't been playing well. They've got three there. Been three day games in Chicago, but then 10 at home. So this might be the moment of truth these first couple of weeks in May. Great stuff, as always, Adam. Always appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Mark, the Reds continue to confound. You know, opened the season with that sweep of the Pirates. They nearly swept the Brewers in a four-game series, and yet the scuffles are well noted. Who are the Cincinnati Reds? What are they going to be this year?
That's a great question. Going into the season, they were a bit of a team of mystery just because they were underrated. They weren't expected to be big challengers in the division, and they had some question marks offensively and with their bullpen on the back of their rotation. And they really, after some nice moments, like you mentioned, the opening of the season against the Pirates, the trip against the Brewers, they've kind of been a bit of a mystery. They aren't hitting well overall, although some guys are certainly doing well individually. And their bullpen's still very much in flux. It's a bit of a inconsistent between the starter and Aroldis Chapman. But at least the fourth guy in the rotation, Anthony Descalfani, has certainly shown up and pitched pretty well. So I think some things remain to be seen before we figure out who the Reds are. They're near the very end of a stretch of all division opponents, and then maybe we'll see what happens after that.
That's got to be really frustrating, I would think, for them. Every team. I mean, I feel like teams that, you know, win 100 games in the year almost will go through a stretch where they're not at their best. They struggle a little bit, drop some games. But to start the season in that way and to have it all be in division, I feel like that can just be a double whammy.
It can be, but they have to face these teams eventually. I mean, I think in a way they're certainly not in bad shape. They're not out of the race by any stretch. They're not in the kind of hole Milwaukee's in right now. I think this is certainly something that could be overcome with a good week or two. I mean, you would never know that this early season kind of slump happened if they have a good a good start to the month of May, or have a good series against Milwaukee and then Atlanta. So there's plenty of baseball left. They have that going for them, but they just definitely need to get some guys at the plate to figure some things out. Jay Bruce right now is in a pretty good funk, but on the other hand, guys like Joey Votto and Zach Cozart have been hitting really well.
Yeah, help me understand the offensive thing, because, you know, a cursory look at the numbers shows, you know, Votto with six bombs, Frazier's hit five out, they're driving in runs, see a handful of guys with pretty decent on-base percentages. You know, Brian Payne is getting on, doing the job behind the plate. Why aren't they scoring runs? What's the problem?
Well, the biggest problem is a lot of their scoring is coming with solo home runs or not a whole lot of guys on base. Right now they're in a pretty tight funk with runners in scoring position, and they're not taking very good at-bats when they're in those situations. Right now, as of we're talking right now, they're 0 for the last 23 with runners in scoring position. They haven't had a hit with that situation since Wednesday when Joey Votto did it in the first inning at Milwaukee. So it's something they really got to improve on. Jay Bruce is kind of talking about how he's not finishing at bats well right now, and he should be getting himself in better situations and better counts. He's finding himself a couple of days ago in 0-2 counts in a key situation, and then he's got to swing defensively, and that's not going to be good for him. And they just got to find better ways. Brandon Phillips, who's actually collecting some hits, he's hitting .269 as the cleanup hitter, but he's not getting any extra base hits. His slugging percentage is exactly .269, and that's right now he's the fourth hitter because Devin Mesoraco has been out. And right now their lineup is missing a key ingredient. Mesoraco they were counting on, and they had him in the cleanup spot originally, and Phillips hitting seventh. And that lineup, when you looked at it going in, was a really nice lineup. It really had some length to it, and they could do some things. They had some run producers in it throughout. And right now they're missing a big one, and it's kind of hurting them a little bit.
The Mesoraco thing's a little confounding too. Why wasn't he put on the DL? I mean, it seems like he's just been taking up a spot for a long time now.
It's a good question. It's been asked a lot, but the answer from Brian Price as of right now is that he can still hit and run without any issue, and therefore he can be a pinch hitter and serve in that role and get in the bat every now and again. Now, I'll say that he's a very expensive pinch hitter with a four-year, $28 million contract. But right now, I feel like that he could still do his rehab, but still be a contributor as a off-the-bench bat. They haven't tried him at catching yet. At some point, they want to get him in the crouch and try catching a bullpen session for a pitcher. But he's not there yet. But as of now, they're at least saying that he can't do any more damage to it just by hitting. So... But I also wonder if they could have a guy that can come off and come up from the minor leagues that could play multiple positions, because they haven't really been burned yet by the lack of a flexibility there. Because if they run out of players later in the game and they need someone to play multiple positions, they're not going to have that guy right now with Mesoraco on the bench.
What about Marlon Byrd? What are you seeing with him? You know, the strikeout numbers are large. The overall numbers are terrible. He's 37 years old. Is there a little bit of concern about what's going on in left field? Is there an option there that they think they might be able to use at some point? Because it's ultimately going to be untenable, I would think.
There's no option right now. The general consensus is Marlon Byrd last year was a 25 homer, 80 RBI guy, and the year before that he had, I think, 20 home run range. And they don't think that in one offseason that all goes away. Obviously, this isn't a very good start. He had a very good spring training, so this wasn't what the club was expecting to start his regular season, but they're going to stick with him. He's been playing decent enough on defense. He's not the only guy that's struggling, but they're far from looking at alternatives right now. And they don't really have a guy in the minor leagues that's ready to come up in the sense. Like Jesse Winker is still in Double-A, and it's not time yet. And they're not in that mode yet, obviously, or may not be in that mode at all this year. But right now they're going to ride it out with Marlon Byrd.
All right, well, let's look at some positives. You know, I mean, look, the team's a couple of games under .500. You can point out a lot of warts. So in some respects, they're probably in good shape to be at 8-10 at this point. Gotten some decent starting pitching from guys like Desclafani and Cueto, and recently Cingrani. Tony Cingrani is back in the bullpen. What's his status? How are they going to use him?
Yes, and Grani came in on Sunday. He threw two very nice scoreless innings with two strikeouts, and he looked really good. It was actually his first time he pitched since April 14th, when he only pitched a third of an inning in that game, so he really hasn't been used a lot. They really wanted to kind of keep him fresh for potential long relief situations, but then they were kind of spiting their own current situation where their veteran relievers in the late innings were really scuffling. Kevin Gregg has not been very good. Burke Badenhop has not been very good lately, and they got to the point where Price is saying, it doesn't matter what the situation is. I have to use the guy that's throwing the best. And Segrani had a nice little outing on Sunday, and I think going forward, they might use him in higher leverage situations. And he's a guy that can throw some heat. He's left-handed. He can face guys from both sides of the plate, and he's good for one or two innings. So I think he might be the next guy that gets a chance. They've tried Gregg. They've tried Badenhop. They've tried Jumbo Diaz. J.J. Hoover has been pretty good. He had one not-so-good outing, but he's been pretty good overall. But I think you're going to see now that maybe Tony Cingrani's chance to get a look at the seventh and eighth inning.
Do they have some depth at AAA, AA? They think they might be able to exploit at some point if they need to?
For the bullpen?
Yeah.
I mean, they do have some more guys. And one of the guys they're kind of waiting on to see what happens is Sam LaCure, who's a veteran. He's off the 40-man roster. They kind of was a tough move for them to make at the very end of camp. They felt like his fastball command wasn't there, and they kind of maybe missed his veteran presence a little bit. He was a guy that was really kind of a glue guy out of that bullpen, even when he wasn't pitching well. And when he was pitching well, he was twice as good to have around. And I think if his command can get better with his fastball and they keep getting decent reports, he might be the guy they want to have called up because they kind of just miss his presence a little bit. But right now they're not ready to make that move.
Homer Bailey's made a couple of starts, come back. How's he look?
I saw his first outing, and he admitted he was a little rough around the edges. I didn't see a second outing. I wasn't on the team with the team that day, but so far they seem like he's pretty pleased about where he should be after having the surgery and going through a rehab kind of the rehab process he went through in spring training. They're going to give him a little bit of an extra day break. They flip flopped the rotation because of the rain out on Saturday. They decided not to skip anyone, but what they did was they're having Johnny Cueto pitch on his regular rest on Tuesday, and instead of Bailey pitching on Wednesday, they're going to use Mike Leake. So then Bailey will throw Thursday on basically 6 days rest. So he's getting two extra days, and they think that's going to be a good move for him.
Well, they could be in a pretty nice spot right now. You know, you get the Brewers for three. That team certainly has been scuffling. And then it's off to Atlanta, the beginning of a long road trip. But, you know, all things considered, Reds might not be in a terrible spot right now. Mark, great stuff as always. We'll check in again next week.
Okay.
All right, Mark Sheldon, MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds edition.